This is the Rogue Startups Podcast, Episode 2.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where startup founders just like you share stories about how they've built and grown their own software businesses. We hope this not only educates you, but inspires and entertains as well. Okay, enough of the fluff. On to our host, Craig Hewitt.
Welcome, and thanks for joining today on Episode 2 of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today, we have a fantastic guest with us, Dave Snyder. Dave is a true lifestyle design and location-independent entrepreneur. I think you guys will really enjoy Dave's story. He's been living on his own and making money online for a few years now and really has an interesting story to share with us about how he's getting his first product off the ground. Dave is also the founder of selfmadebusinessmen.com, which is a fantastic resource for anyone interested in learning more about business and online marketing. The show notes for this episode can be found at roguestartups.com/episode2. Dave Snyder, welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast. How are you doing?
Doing well, Craig.
Great, great. So, you know, guys, I think that I like to start off episodes by having our guests tell us a little bit about where they come from, what their background is, and a little bit of how they arrived at where they are today. So, Dave, do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in tech?
Yeah, no, don't mind at all. It's really a very non-traditional route, or maybe all routes are non-traditional. I'm not sure. But personally, in college, I was a math major. When I graduated, I worked at a financial services company as a business analyst, which was basically like a marketing role. After about 2 years of doing sort of a corporate role, my girlfriend and I wanted to basically do some extended travel. We planned a 2-year backpacking trip around Europe and Asia. And during that time, we started to do a bit of work online, trying to find out ways where we could, you know, earn money through website advertising and things like that, just as kind of a natural sort of opportunity when you're kind of doing a digital, when you're living sort of a digital nomad lifestyle. We started to get to the point where we were self-sufficient in our income because we were doing some different SEO, website building, selling, and things like that. And, you know, that started to kind of get me thinking, well, hey, this is actually really possible because I've sort of replaced my previous full-time income with this, you know, online entrepreneurship endeavor. And, you know, sort of one thing led to another. And about 7 months ago, I connected with two other guys, one marketer, one developer. And we had all been thinking about maybe doing like some sort of a software application. And we had this idea for digital marketers. And there was a pretty decent overlap. We decided to kind of get together and work on it.
Neat, neat. There's a lot in that, you know, a few sentences there with how you got where you are today. I want to dig into a couple of those things. So the first part of that is when you left your job and went on this extended trip with your girlfriend, was your expectation that you would create a means to supplement your income and really replace your income during that time? Or was it just, hey, we have enough money to go for 2 years, we're going to go and see what happens?
It was pretty much, you know, that we had enough money to go for 2 years and then I was going to go to business school. I mean, my hope was that we would make maybe $5,000 between the two of us in total within, say, the 2 years of working online. And although that's obviously a very small amount of money, we had saved up about, I don't know, say 45 or 50 grand to do the trip. So that would have been like another 10% and probably would have given us an extra 1 or 2 months just to kind of cap off the trip. And then I was going to go to business school and just take on a lot of debt. And we actually, during that time, earned, you know, significantly more than 5K. Like I said, we kind of replaced our full-time incomes for at least for about a year and a half.
Well, that's really amazing. I mean, that's very fortuitous for you guys to be able to do that while you're traveling and probably having the experience of a lifetime to travel like that and find your way online in a digital world. That's really neat.
Definitely.
yep. Neat, neat. So that begs a question, and it's a little off topic, I guess, but what would your advice be? Or you learned a pretty valuable lesson, maybe by chance a little bit, but what would your advice be to people, not necessarily looking at college, but looking at graduate school and further education like that? I mean, do you think the opportunity is available enough to the majority of us to where graduate school isn't worth it? I mean, I have a master's myself, and I know I wouldn't be where I am today without it in my current job, but I don't know that I would do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends, obviously, what graduate school you're looking at, right? I mean, if you're trying to become sort of a doctor or a lawyer, they sort of have a cartel where I'd say it's a fairly difficult to become one of those without going to grad school, as far as I know. The obvious one is, you know, sort of business school or maybe some master's degrees where, you know, are you better off sort of going to business school or maybe going it on your own? And yeah, I think everyone will kind of say different things, and people tend to, frankly, say whatever experience they had is the right one. I think it's just the bias of sort of thinking that our choices tend to be right. Personally, I'm sort of glad that I didn't make the choice to go to business school, and I have no near plans to do so, and instead basically took my capital and the added time that I had to invest in myself and my projects.
Yep, I think they call it survivorship bias. You know, the things that you either do well or get through, you think are right just because you made it through them. So yeah, that makes sense. So one other question related to that bit of intro there is you made pretty good money, I guess, in digital marketing and making money online type activities, and then pivoted from that to a real product. Can you walk through your decision in that? I mean, is it that things like Panda and Penguin updates from Google really scared you away from making money online without a product and having those services, or did something else trigger you to make that move? It sounds like you were successful along the way and then are starting down a little bit different road.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were definitely doing well. I'd say maybe on average we were earning, you know, very low five figures a month, you know, 10 grand, maybe 15 grand or so. And so we're definitely kind of, you know, sustainable. But personally, I always feel very much like, you know, like the world's going to end tomorrow type of thing. Not to be like overly pessimistic or negative, but that I'm always worried about, you know, the worst case scenario. You know, what if everything kind of collapsed tomorrow? And to be honest, it basically did. Where January 2014, after we had like really a record month of earnings, some different kind of algorithmic changes came about. Some press releases came out. Some large companies got hit in the space that we were working in, and it really kind of zapped the demand for, you know, whatever the link selling that we were doing and some of the other stuff. And the income just started to dry up very, very quickly. And, you know, I had at that point a choice to sort of, you know, really try to maybe double down and revive, you know, what we were doing, or just maybe wait out the storm and hope or assume that maybe after a few months it would start to pick up again, or to really just start something completely different. And for me, I just felt like something completely different, where I was building a product that I could have customers and know that they were going to, you know, for the most part, going to be my customers every month, and I could work to kind of retain them and engage with them, just felt like a much more long-term sustainable strategy. And it just seemed like the perfect time to kind of make that switch.
Yep. Probably a fortuitous time for that intervention to come in and make you change your mind a little bit, probably. And I would agree. I mean, I'd like to say I'm a realistic person. Maybe I'm a little pessimistic, but I agree that I think it changes over time to things you don't control will keep us all up at night unnecessarily. Whereas you control your audience and control your sphere of influence in a product. And I think that's a more sure way of doing things. I think it's probably a little bit harder, and you may be seeing that in your runway into your product. But I think once you get there and once you make it, it's easier to sustain and probably easier to reproduce.
Yeah, definitely. Hope so.
Yep. So tell everyone a little bit about your current product or your project and kind of where it is, where it came from, how you got there, and all those sort of things.
Sure. So the current project is a software application called Ninja Outreach. It was originally envisioned to be a blogger outreach tool for digital marketers. And I guess I'm going back to now about June of 2015, where we kind of, the three of us got together and really mapped out what this product was going to look like. And there are other tools like this on the market, not many, but definitely, you know, more than one. And we were sort of looking at them, using them, and each one sort of fell short in different areas. Either they were way too expensive, that, you know, a small business or individual, a freelancer blogger could not really afford them, or they were missing some key features, like they didn't have any outreach capabilities, which, you know, if you're performing blogger outreach, you know, it doesn't do the whole job to just get the list of bloggers, but you actually want to outreach to them. So we started to kind of see that there were maybe these little gaps in the market. Additionally, we started thinking about the market itself. And I said, you know, where do I think sort of blogger outreach will be 10 years from now? And I thought, you know, this is probably a growing market, and it's just only going to get better and better as people start to, I think, maybe, you know, appreciate or respect kind of the audiences that bloggers are building. There were kind of several green lights here that made us want to do it. So we started kind of developing this product, and we only have one developer. I'm basically non-technical. My other partner is non-technical. So it's kind of a one-man team. It's completely self-funded. We haven't received any outside funding. We've probably invested about, I don't know, maybe like 10 grand or so to kind of get it where it is currently. Mm-hmm. And, currently, this is January, 2015. We're in beta. We've been in beta for about 2 months now. We've had, over 100 people activate the software, which is, I think, good. It's difficult for me to kind of benchmark, basically like activation numbers and things, this being my sort of first product or whatever. And we're hoping to move sort of commercial, you know, literally in the next week or so.
Wow. Great. That's exciting. That's real exciting. So Ninja Outreach is a desktop, based SaaS app essentially, right?
Yeah. I think that that's definitely true. Usually like the SaaS is reserved for cloud applications, I think. But if you think of just the general sort of software as a service, you know, a monthly subscription model, all those sort of features that we have at Ninja Outreach, it is a desktop application for Windows only right now. And that's sort of like, you can say iteration one of the product, to kind of get it out there.
Sure, sure. I love the idea of MVP and get something out the door. Like you said, you have 100 beta users who've activated the software, and I'm sure, you know, from some of our previous conversations, you're either already developing or real close to starting to develop a web-based app to increase your reach to people who don't necessarily want to put something on the desktop. So with a Windows app, and this is my naivete a little bit, is that .NET application development?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. How did you, so your third partner is the developer of mm-hmm. that?
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
If you had to, and this might be just grasping at straws a little bit, and you might not know the answer because you haven't been faced with it, but if you had to go out into the Odesk of the world to find a developer for this, what do you think that would look like? I mean, is that pretty easy to find solid .NET developers?
No, I'd say it's definitely more difficult than just like a general maybe web-based, you know, app developer. We have one technical founder, obviously, and he kind of works full time. We've used a few contractors on Odesk, and to sort of varying degrees of success. It's difficult, I guess. Not everybody, there's less people that know these languages. And obviously there's, and there's difficult in terms of resources, in terms of how much money we feel like, we can afford to kind of, you know, hire a developer to really kind of plug away on this. And I'm non-technical, so sometimes it's difficult for me to know whether this is just a problem specific to, you know, us being a desktop app, or it's just kind of like a general problem. But I know one thing that we run into is, you know, it can be difficult to have multiple developers working on the product at the same time because you run into conflicts and things like that. So there's definitely, it's definitely tough.
Yep, sure. I mean, in the little bit of light development work I've done, I know version control is very necessary, but at the same time can be very complex. And that's me as a very lay person in terms of things like Git. But I think that it's a necessary evil, but something you got to have a real defined process mm-hmm. in, or your stuff gets royally screwed up. It's amazing. I messed up a project. My buddy and I were doing a web page for a CrossFit gym, and I went in and forced a push back to the repo and deleted about a month's worth of his work. So it was, fortunately he knew how to fix it, but I would have been lost and probably would have gotten my ass whooped. But, so there's a lot to the learning that you've done along the way. And you know, this is really probably ironic. So the first episode, with Justin McGill was his first software project is a SaaS product too. So it's interesting that you guys, both your first real foray into a SaaS product, or into a software product is SaaS. I think, you know, we both listen to Startups for the Rest of Us, and those guys are just rock stars, I think. And they advocate this stair-step approach where you start off something small, you get into a simple, maybe a WordPress plugin or something like that, and then maybe something a little more complex like SaaS. Do you think you missed anything along the way in jumping straight into a, I'll call it a SaaS, even though it's not exactly SaaS because it's not cloud-based, but do you think you missed anything along the way jumping straight from your digital marketing and make money online type SEO work to a project like this? Or
I think, you know, it's kind of like yes and no. And the first is obviously, you know, understanding that we don't always get to pick the opportunities that kind of come to us. When I met with the other two guys, we all sort of had, you know, a similar vision for what we wanted to do. The developer had, you know, has a lot of experience kind of building software applications and taking them to market. So I think, you know, to say, well, maybe we should do like a WordPress plugin, you know, for example, it would have been, you know, selling the team short a little bit. On the other hand, I definitely think that there was an opportunity to have started with a more, say, niche down product than we have. And then kind of to expand it from there. For example, you know, right now the tool currently does prospecting and outreach, meaning that you can search for it by keyword, get a list of results, and then you can reach out to them through email integration. And those are almost like they're related, obviously, but they're very separate components. And the way we approached it was that we were going to do both of them before we kind of released the product. And I think in hindsight, it would have been better to say have focused on building a great prospecting tool, and which we could have brought to market in half the time, because it's literally about half the piece of the puzzle. And then to have started to build the outreach, basically after that, you know, there would have been some more money coming in. Maybe we could have done, you know, a different developer, for things like that. So that I think the strategy and what we did was maybe not ideal.
Yep. It's interesting. I think I will be surprised as I go through this podcast and interviewing people a lot like you who, you know, I hope to have on people who are not absolutely only non-technical founders, but definitely early stage startup founders. I think that I expect to consistently hear that their first project is too big and too complex. I don't think any of us are alone. The things I've done in the past, all of which have not worked out terribly well, have just been way too complex. And I think that's probably a result of us all being ambitious people, right? We are wanting to go create a software product out of nothing, and we think it'll change the world. And the reality is probably the best products out there, you know, Patrick McKenzie and the bingo card creator is a great example of how to really niche down into something that's just almost stupid. But you're able to understand it really well, right? You're able to understand everything about it and your market and the people that buy from you and how to get people to your website and conversions and things like that. Whereas we get creep in the scope of our project pretty easily because we think we're Superman. It's just an interesting observation, I guess.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's especially difficult, I think, being a non-technical founder where it's so hard to get a gauge on kind of how massive really a project is going to be. I mean, when we originally scoped out what we were trying to do, you know, we were looking at 3 months. And, you know, I mean, some people would say, you know, 3 months is a long time. You know, there are plenty of other examples. You know, Buffer was like made in a week, and now they're, you know, like, they're doing really well, and there's, you know, lots of other examples of people releasing, you know, apps and stuff in literally weeks and doing really well. But, you know, for what we had scoped, I thought 3 months was great. You know, I was like, oh, I'm fine to wait an extra month or two to kind of have, you know, something a little bit more impressive to share, especially when you're coming out with a product where there's already competitors in the market. You feel the need to basically sort of one up them or fill a gap. You know, nobody's interested in kind of like a worse product, right? Well, like, what's the story there? Sure. However, 3 months kind of easily becomes 7 months. And now all of a sudden it feels like, oh, okay, maybe this was a bit too big.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. It's a good lesson to learn. And I think that probably all that will resolve out of this is that you are building a bigger and better product, like you're saying. And so when you do realize your success, it will be magnified in a positive way versus starting off small. And sometimes those are probably tougher to pivot into a bigger product. So I don't think you'll ultimately regret the decision. And I think we all that make these things successful even if they're a little bigger than we ideally would have wanted, hopefully we'll see the upside of that down the road. So I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What do you think has been the biggest challenge getting your product off the ground? You're in beta right now. You have about 100 downloads or activated customers. What do you think has been the biggest challenge so far?
I mean, there's really two main things I'd say. You know, one is obviously the technical side, which is just development and just kind of the speed of development and things like that. You know, but, you know, and as a non-technical founder, it's just really extremely difficult for me to influence that, you know, like significantly. I mean, I can't, you know, tell the developer that, you know, he needs to be working more, you know, he's already working, you know, a ton, or, you know, that he needs to be working faster or anything like that. And then, you know, it's difficult to kind of, like I said, hire additional people because you run into sort of conflicts and things like that, you know. So that's the technical side of things, and really the best solution for that is probably just to start smaller. But specific to our product, I guess the biggest difficulties are generally around, you know, that is a desktop application. It's difficult to get people to activate. So for example, you know, we have about 100 plus people who have activated the software. Now that is a subset of probably over 350 people who expressed interest in the software, meaning that we actually created login details and activation details for them and sent them, you know, to them after they expressed interest. So we're finding that, you know, really less than one third of people are actually activating the software. And that usually is a result of, you know, a big one is people are Mac users and they don't realize it's a Windows only application before they say, hey, I want to test it out. And then, you know, so that's been a fair amount of people. You know, other people, they just get kind of scared off by the downloading and the software and stuff like that. And then but the largest group of people is probably the same group of people that everyone has to deal with, which is that you can literally put login details in somebody's hands, but you can't log in for them. And there's just always going to be, you know, some large set of people that just do not activate, even though they say they want to.
Yeah, that's I think that your one third conversion rate is actually pretty good, just based on that's me being a layperson. Like you said, I think one third conversion rate is pretty respectable. That's neat. So I know you did a lot of work and are probably continuing to do a lot of work in your pre-release phase as you're going up to public launch. Can you talk a little bit about how you built your list, what you've done with the list over time, and looking back maybe a little bit now that you're real close to public launch, what you think of that process along the way?
Sure. So, you know, my personal opinion is marketing is an ongoing job. Even where the product is in development and there's almost like nothing to talk about, you know, there's always something the marketer can be doing, you know, trying to build buzz, trying to, you know, get people on the list and just get the word out, you know, maybe get commitments for the future, really anything like that. So while the product was kind of, you know, being developed or is being developed, myself and my partner were always trying to kind of build buzz. In terms of like, you know, building an email list, which is probably one of the top recommended sort of digital marketing, call it tactics or whatever that you can do. We've done like a fair job. We don't have a list of thousands and thousands of people. There's probably 700 people or so on that list. When we launched the beta, there was, I think, maybe just a couple hundred, say 300 or so people. And it's, you know, it's the usual type of stuff that I think you would expect people to be doing, which is direct emailing people who were, you know, what we consider our target market to be. Our target market is fairly easy to find, I would say, compared to maybe other people, because we're just looking for, you know, digital marketers, content marketers, you know, digital marketing services. So basically all these people are online, their contact information is online. Sure. So they, you know, emailing people, using LinkedIn to find, you know, professionals in the SEO and digital marketing industry and kind of networking, connecting with them, messaging them. Twitter has been great for, frankly, just tweeting to different digital marketing agencies agencies and saying, hey, are you interested in checking out this beta? And we get pretty good response from that. Content marketing. So obviously we have a blog and we write, you know, weekly and kind of promote the post. And it hasn't necessarily been any one thing that's just kind of produced dramatic results, but more the combination of a lot of little wins here and there.
Sure. Have you done any paid acquisition or paid traffic yet?
Yeah, we've done a little bit just to kind of test the waters. My partner did some paid acquisition on Facebook. I did some really, really light, like Google AdSense paid traffic, but that was really nothing. I'd say really we did some Facebook advertising. The thing about paid advertising is it's extremely difficult to gauge whether or not it's a positive ROI when you don't really know the lifetime value of a customer who you're acquiring, you know, because, you know, there's nothing for them to really buy. So you can ballpark it for sure. I mean, you can kind of put in some money to kind of get people on the email list or whatever. But it wasn't the right time to be doing paid advertising. I just felt like that was more of like a, you know, a tier three type of acquisition strategy that we weren't really ready yet, didn't have the resources for. So we did some paid advertising on Facebook. We got some okay results, I think, but we're not doing any at the moment.
Okay. Interesting. I'm hearing more and more that paid advertising on Facebook is trumping Google AdSense and that, you know, Twitter paid or promoted or sponsored ads are probably the next wave. I think it's interesting how we're doing more and more advertising on social media as opposed to just Google. Just an observation, really.
But yeah,
it's good
I think
to hear that you're getting good results and good traction on Facebook so far, at least.
Yeah, I mean, usually I would think of Facebook as being more like B2C type marketing because it's really filled with like consumers. But Twitter is definitely the one that I'm really interested in trying because we've gotten a pretty decent response from people by just tweeting to them. So I get this feeling that maybe part of our target market is kind of on and active on Twitter. So I definitely want to try that one out. And then AdSense is obviously like it's always sort of an obvious choice for everyone to do. But yeah, I think the targeting that Facebook offers is just kind of superior.
Yep. I would agree with that. I think that, like you're saying, the tailoring your advertising to your audience is ultimately the best way to do it now that we're finding more acceptable avenues of advertising. So that's probably in general something good for us all to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, looking into your crystal ball a little bit, I think I'd like to hear kind of what you see 6 months from now. I don't like to look too far into the future because I think it's just kind of silly. There's too many things that can change. But where do you think you see Ninja Outreach middle of the year?
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, the project started around 7 months ago or so. So we're kind of like I can kind of look back at where we were when we started and where we are now and say, you know, that's what like kind of a 6 month sort of time span was. And you know, as much as I feel like the progress has been really slow and I really wish we had gotten out there earlier and, you know, just waiting and stuff like that, I also have to acknowledge that, you know, when we started kind of 7 months ago, there, you know, we had like kind of like very little. I mean, there was kind of a real basic product. I mean, not even an MVP, just a P. You know, it was like a little nothing.
A lowercase p.
And then obviously kind of like a basic marketing plan and just some kind of light knowledge of the industry and things like that. You know, no one in our newsletter, no nothing. And then here we are sort of 7 months later and we have, you know, 100 people have activated the software. We have, you know, several hundred people on the newsletter. The website's up and running. We're kind of out there a bit. So I do feel like, and honestly, the product is actually really pretty good. I mean, I know it's, there's a lot more that we want to do with it, you know, but it's fully functional. It's not really very buggy and it is prospecting and outreach combined. And, you know, I will say that there are a lot of other tools kind of in our niche that really have been around for years and have not combined both prospecting and outreach. So, I mean, that's something to be kind of proud of as well. So I guess my hope is that 6 months from now, we'll really be cooking because, you know, if this is kind of where we are right now, you know, another sort of 6 months of really development and marketing, and hopefully things tend to kind of pick up just in the longer you've been around because you have maybe more resources, more knowledge, and just kind of more momentum. That maybe in 6 months, I would definitely expect us to have, you know, a paid that will be commercial. that we should have users. The big question is kind of when can we kind of transition to sort of a web-based app? I think that's kind of that, you know, that's a big milestone development-wise, and it's really hard to gauge, you know, when that's going to be. And then the other, you know, milestone tends to be more around just kind of marketing and financial metrics. You know, my goal for the end of the year is to try to get us to, say, $20,000 in monthly recurring revenue, which if the, you know, the price of the product is, say, you know, an average of $50 a month per user, you know, you're looking at, I don't know, what's that, like 400 paid users or something. So, and that's kind of just some ballpark stuff that my goals are, but what happens is kind of hard to say.
Yeah, sure. That's it's funny. I think looking too far in the future, I mean, it's the beginning of the year right now. I look at my year from last year and it's so different than
right.
I could have imagined it was. If looking in July of last year at the end of December, I was in a way really disappointed in myself because so many things changed. But I think you got to look at what the opportunities you have and do the best you can, not to be too soft, but do the best you can with what you have. And I think you guys are set up really well from what you're saying, that you built the app that doesn't exist, so that fits the product market need out there, and so you fit the need for sure. And it sounds like the marketing efforts you're doing, even in beta, are going to really pay off in the future. I mean, not to be too much of a cheerleader, but I think you guys are definitely going down the right road. That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's, you know, it's never a perfect sort of lap. You know, it's like it's always got, you know, a lot of bumps and kind of wrong turns or whatever. But I do feel like the trajectory is right. I know the team is committed. And, you know, if I look at like my goals, you know, that I made last year in early January, you know, it was, you know, build a couple of niche sites and some other stuff. I mean, it was like totally unrelated to kind of where I am, you know, right now. And now I feel like, you know, I'm really kind of honing in on, you know, what is the one project that I really want to work on and build throughout the year and really grow. So I kind of feel like we're kind of getting there.
Yep. Neat. One of the things that I like to think about in that respect is you're talking about building niche sites. I've dabbled in all sorts of ridiculousness over the last 2 years, probably, and looking at making money online. Until really, I've gotten very focused right now about what I'm going to do to make money, to invest in web properties and really build up, I would say, an empire, because that's probably a little dramatic. But I have a defined path for how I want things to go at this point. And so it involves a couple of really big steps. And I like to say we have a certain number of big at-bats in life, in our business or our entrepreneurial journey. Where do you think that Ninja Outreach fits in your big at-bats in life? I mean, do you think this is one of the big steps you're going to take, or do you think this is a stepping stone to other ventures in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely, without a doubt, this is the biggest step I've taken, you know, in my life up to this point professionally. I mean, obviously, you know, quitting my job to go travel around the world has some degree of bigness, I guess, to it, but it was in a bit of a different way. And honestly, I didn't feel like that was as risky as maybe some other people might think it was. So Ninja, and then kind of everything that I really attempted between that and now Ninja Outreach was, you know, it was really very not that big. I mean, you know, I mean, I wasn't putting down loads of cash. The risk was really, you know, sort of minimalized, and I was very comfortable with what I was doing, and I wasn't, you know, working with other people and stuff like that. So I think, you know, Ninja Outreach is sort of the biggest step right now. You know, in terms of kind of where this falls, it's really hard to say. I mean, there's one, you know, sort of outcome where we just kind of build this app and we just kind of grow it and grow it and grow it. And maybe we become this company and just kind of build this brand here. And that lasts for 5, 10 plus years. And there's another thing that maybe, you know, we do this for a couple years. Maybe it falls apart. Maybe it gets acquired or, you know, hopefully something positive, but you know, realistically it could end in the next couple of years. And then I would probably be on to the next thing, I guess. So it's really hard to say, but without a doubt, it's definitely a huge stepping stone in that I wouldn't expect anything I do from this point on to be sort of, you know, smaller in size. I mean, you like to think that the kind of attempts and projects that you work on get bigger as you get bolder.
Yep. That's something I hadn't really thought of before, but it sure makes sense. You don't often go backwards from a learning experience like this. So that's neat. That's real neat. I can imagine HubSpot being a good target to acquire something like Ninja Outreach, but
yeah, we'll let them know about it.
Hopefully they're listening. So, all right. So we're going to go into a couple of more rapid fire questions. You can give simple or complex answers, but just a couple pretty simple questions here. So First is, what is your advice to people thinking about learning to code?
Really depends. You know, my advice is if you're going to learn the code, I feel like you should go sort of all in and really learn one language. That you can learn sufficiently enough to actually produce something, because it just being kind of a partial coder, I just don't really feel like that helps you in any way.
Yep. I would agree with that. And I would also agree that if you were going to learn to code, you need to learn full stack. So something like PHP or Python. Uh-huh. Just learning, you know, front end Angular JS is going to leave you at a void, right? You're just going to have to rely on other people. You're not going to be able to, you know, be a full-time freelancer, I don't think. So, yeah, that's interesting. Is there one app or web service you can't live without?
One app or website which I can't live without.
Other than Google.
Does Google apps count?
Sure. I mean, I do everything in Google apps, so that absolutely counts. Yep. So I think for myself, until fairly recently, the biggest, and for a lot of people, the biggest obstacle in moving forward as an entrepreneur is making their first dollar. What advice would you give to people who are just looking to make their first dollar online?
If you're looking to just make your first dollar online, I would recommend basically turning a skill that you have into a service and then trying to market yourself as a freelancer. And if you don't feel like you have a marketable skill, then you should probably learn one.
Yeah, that's great advice. Very, very nice. Very nice. Last rapid fire question is, what is your biggest regret or lesson learned so far in your current project?
In my current project, it's probably... Jeez, I don't know. I don't know. It's sometimes I regret. We had a choice, you know, back set, you know, 7 months ago, whether or not we should try to be a web app or a desktop app. And you know, obviously, it wasn't just like a, you know, should we be one or the other, but there were repercussions of each, and whether or not, you know, how expensive it would be. And I do think often, you know, did we make the wrong choice here with what we went? But there were a lot of positive reasons as to why we went with what we did. It would allow us to kind of get it out there faster. And it was a heck of a lot less resource intensive, you know, financially to do it this way. It's sort of a grass is greener type of thing. But that was definitely kind of like a fork in the road, I do feel like, for us. And it's hard to know what the other path would have given us.
Yep. I think you made the right decision. I think a big part of a product like you're making is getting something out the door. And the fact that you and your team were already started down that road, it means a lot, probably. You know, going back to square one is tough. But I also think that you learn something with getting that MVP out the door about your market and about your customers and things like that. And it won't be hard for you guys to go back and develop a web app down the road. I just don't think it'll be that tough. So
yeah.
But that's a good thing to think about. I think a lot of us probably have something in mind. We might have already something sketched out, and the thought of going back to square one is daunting. Whereas the choice to move forward with what we have, even if in some opinions and in some people's eyes might not be exactly the most ideal thing, I think that just doing something and just shipping code and just opening a product or a site or whatever really means a lot. And I think it's discounted a lot of times by perfection. You know, people think that having a perfect app or a perfect site is really what you need. And I think just getting something out the door and seeing if people are going to pay you money for it is really what you're looking for. And you can get things more ideally set after that, but especially on a longer term project, like what you're looking at. So
yeah, for sure.
Yep. Neat. So do you want to talk about mastery a little bit?
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of, I mean, the Mastery is basically, it's a community for entrepreneurs. You know, it's supposed to be sort of a private application, only community, that I started, maybe a few months ago with, two other guys. There's sort of supposed to be a specific focus on finding, you know, mastermind groups. So we did launch that, about a month ago. There are like 200 members in it right now. And you know, I'd say it's going okay. Kind of like many things. It's like, it could be better, could be worse. But if that's something, you know, obviously that, you know, listeners are interested in, and just also in general, you know, definitely, I'm always happy to be contacted by email or through my website and things like that.
Yep. Yep. Interesting. Sorry to pop it on you. We didn't talk about that ahead of time, but I know it's something that is just getting off the ground for you. So, we'll keep it in there unless you want me to edit it out. I don't.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's a really neat concept. I think the idea of a mastermind is a really powerful one. Dave and I were part of the same mastermind a few months back, and I got a lot out of it. And unfortunately, I didn't really fit with what they were trying to do longer term. I'd pivoted my focus a little bit to where I didn't fit in their group, but sure got a lot out of talking to a small group of like-minded people on a regular basis. There's a lot to it. There's, you know, accountability and bouncing ideas off of each other and sharing best practices and lessons learned. And I guess it's a little bit of what we're trying to do with the podcast, but on a much more intimate scale where people are really comfortable sharing all their thoughts and feelings. Not to be too soft, but a lot of it is the emotional things. I mean, it's the fear of failure and the fear of success. Altogether, yeah. Are really, really real. So that's definitely neat. I think it's a great concept, and I hope you all the best with it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Appreciate the support.
Yeah, no problem. So you know, I guess last question here is another mindset type question. Is, you know, entrepreneurship is a really difficult path, and like you said, it's winding and always a little unpredictable. But also very rewarding. What would you say to someone who's just starting out as an entrepreneur, as you're someone who's seen a fair bit of success so far?
You know, I mean, definitely be prepared to fail. I do not know anybody who hasn't failed at some point. And, even myself, who I guess some people might say, oh, I've experienced some success. I was able to at least replicate a full-time income for, you know, an extended period of time. I still feel like, you know, I've had a lot of failures, and, you know, a lot of, kind of, you know, obstacles to overcome, so to speak. So, you know, but if you can, if you don't go all in, and you can bounce back from those failures, you'll probably be better off for it, hopefully.
Yep. Yep. I would agree with that. I think that a big thing we learn from is just doing. And like you said, just go all in, mess up if you have to, but you're going to learn so much from those experiences that'll make you smarter and better next time you go out and make something happen. I think that's great advice. So I do have one other question. So I love this thing that Noah Kagan advocates, and it is, the concept is to walk into Starbucks next time you go for a coffee and ask for a 10% discount. And the concept behind it is to really take yourself out of your comfort zone. You know, maybe it's that you're shy or you think that discounts are below you, but really drawing yourself out of your comfort zone is pretty important. And I think for me, the podcast is one of those things that talking for an hour in a recorded way to reach maybe potentially thousands of people one day is a something that I'm not used to. So it's been a real learning experience for me so far. What is something you've done recently? And it doesn't necessarily have to be business related, that was really outside your comfort zone, but looking back now, you're really glad you did it because you grew so much from it.
Man, I've always got like business kind of in my head. So I know there are some sort of more life related type things where I kind of got out of my comfort zone. I've done a fair amount of public speaking kind of in the past, you know, but I can't like think of anything, in particular. Obviously we're doing this road trip right now. You know, but I think, you know, at least kind of what Ninja Outreach feels for me, I guess, getting out of my comfort zone, where it's probably the first time where I'm really kind of putting myself and my project in the front of people that I know. The work that we did, you know, previously where we were making money, it was very much sort of behind the scenes, just myself and my girlfriend working. But now, you know, my relatives know about my project. I kind of announced it on the blog, things like that. So it's just really kind of like, if I fail, you know, people that I know will know that I failed. So, you know, that's definitely kind of a big one.
Yep. I can echo that. I just published my first book on Kindle self-publishing and, you know, sent it to my friends and my family. And I don't know which group was scarier to send it to, but for sure, you know, the thought of those people reading what I put a lot of time, but about a month of real hard work into it. And it was about 50 pages. It wasn't a really long book, but, mm-hmm. you know, to ask them to look at it and read it and give me a honest review, I didn't even ask for 5 stars, was really, really putting yourself out there to something that, for me at least, people didn't know that I knew about this topic. And
yeah,
it's an interesting thing to have your worlds collide like that. I agree. That's very, it was very uncomfortable. I can relate. I would think for you, if I was in your shoes, going on a 2-year vacation with my girlfriend would be pretty uncomfortable too, but.
if you were going with my girlfriend, that would make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Right. I don't think I have to worry about that. That's funny. All right. So we're about 45 minutes now. I like to ask one last question. That is there any question that I didn't ask you that you would like me to?
Well, the only other question is sort of where can you find me? Yeah. That is, you know, and maybe this will be put in, if there's any sort of, notes or details or things. My email is dave@ninjaarish.com. I can also be found on Skype, david.schneider8. Always love when like people reach out to me and they want to talk, you know, about business entrepreneurship or anything, obviously Ninja Outreach. So yeah, feel free to sort of, hit me up.
Yep, absolutely. And the show notes for this episode will be at roguestartups.com/episode2, the number 2. And Dave will be hanging out in the show notes there. If you guys want to leave a comment in the comment section, he'll be able to answer those questions there. You can, of course, reach out to him directly at those email addresses. And we'll have all those things as well as links and contact information in the show notes as well. So, well, Dave, I really appreciate you taking some time out of the day. I know you're busy with getting ready to launch Ninja Outreach, and I really appreciate you taking some time to hop on the podcast today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig.
All right. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
See ya.
Thank you for joining us today on the Rogue Startups Podcast, Episode 2 with Dave Schneider. Check out the show notes at roguestartups.com/episode2. Dave will be there in the comments section at the end, and feel free to ask him any questions about his new products or about entrepreneurship in general. Look forward to seeing you guys next Wednesday for Episode 3.